there's not really much that scares me. I look at things that spook most people as coincidences. That's not to say that nothing has ever scared me, but in general, I'm not scared by much. I remember about 15 years ago, when I was about 10 years old, I would tuck in my sister each night because if I didn't, no one would. She would have been about 5 at the time, and like most 5-year-olds, everything freaks them out. I did the normal monster checks, in the closet, under the bed, and in the closet again for safety. Of course, I didn't mind much because I knew nothing would ever be there, and it would make her feel better. One night, she seemed more scared than usual. She had me check under the bed 5 times before she went to sleep. I assured her each time that there was nothing there, but still I checked for her. After she fell asleep, I couldn't help but wonder what was it about that night that made her so unsettled. I even offered to check the closet again, but she wasn't interested. I peered under the bed 1 final time after making sure she was asleep. I didn't want her thinking that I felt a bit scared too. What I saw when I looked under there, I'm still not sure. It was not a person or an animal. I'm not even sure if it had a face, but it was something. As quick as I looked up to make sure she was still sleeping, I looked back under the bed, and it was gone. I wasn't as scared as I felt I should have been. Was it just my imagination playing tricks on me, or something really under there? One thing I do remember about the figure was that it almost looked a bit sad, like it felt bad or something about being a monster under the bed. I'm not sure how else to describe it, and I only saw it for a second, but I'll never forget it. I never told my sister about what I saw. Who knows what kind of fucked up childhood that would have given her, on top of the one we already had. About a week later, my dad left. I wasn't that surprised. When your parents are always yelling and screaming, you more or less start to wonder why one of them hasn't left already. My dad leaving ended up being one of the best things to happen for our family. I hate to say it, but it's his fault the first 10 years of my life were so terrible. It must have woken up my mom too, because she changed. She became the best, most loving, amazing mom I could have ever asked for. She only had 1 rule. We were never to talk about Dad. That was fine with us. Neither of us were really fond of him. It was because of him that we had to find new ways to cover up our bruises before school every day. My sister and I ended up having a rather normal life after that, which is why I got confused when I received a call from her last night in tears. It took me some time to calm her down. She told me that she started having nightmares, very vivid nightmares. I assured her that there was nothing to worry about. It was most likely stress from school or work, and that it would sort itself out. She was not having it. She told me the dreams didn't feel like dreams. Unfortunately, I knew exactly what she was talking about. I've had dreams like this before too. The best way to describe it is, these are lucid dreams that you can't control and they're fucking terrifying. They started to happen to me after I saw the figure under the bed. Over the years, they calmed down, and I chalked them up to my mind reacting to something that it didn't understand. My nightmares consisted of nonsense, a chaos of noise, with shapes blurring across my vision. They happened to me at least once a month at first, and slowed down to once a year at most. Each nightmare was different, but one thing stayed true in each of them. I would see that figure, and right after I would wake up in a cold sweat. They stopped the day I met my wife, and I know that sounds like crap, but she's been a blessing in my life and has kept my head on straight through difficult times. So when my sister told me that the nightmares ended with a faceless figure staring at her, I knew that this wasn't a coincidence. The figure that has been haunting me ever since I saw it all those years ago was now after her. I had no choice but to tell her what I saw that night. She thought I was making fun of her and hung up the phone. I tried calling her back over and over until finally she answered the phone.
"What do you want? I'm sorry I bothered you. I forgot, nothing scares you, right?"
"Listen, I'm not making fun of you. I'm serious. I never told you because, well, I didn't want to scare you, and I wasn't sure of what I saw." She calmed down, and I told her my help was genuine. I asked her if anything weird or abnormal had happened lately, if there was any big change in her life. My sister is great at avoiding a question. She wants people to like her, so she won't admit when something is bothering her. This time she didn't hold back one bit. All she said was,
"It's Matt."
Matt, if I'm correct, was her newest boyfriend. I asked, "What about Matt?" She went on to explain how when they got together, he was perfect, the best boyfriend she could have ever asked for. She proceeded to give me details that I didn't want to hear, but I let her finish, since she was already so shaken up. What she told me next made me want to jump out of my chair and go find this asshole. A few months into their relationship, he deemed it acceptable to start beating her. I could only remember what we went through before and wondered to myself if she remembered.
"It's not only that, there's more. Something happened."
I told her to go on. I needed her to get it all out so I knew as much as I needed to kick this guy's ass.
"Well, we were fighting one night, and I told him to leave. I tried to break up with him, but he just wouldn't stop. He told me that I needed him."
She then went silent. "Hello? Are you there? Are you alright? What's going on, sis?" I heard a cry from the other side of the phone.
"I don't know what happened next. It sounds crazy."
I assured her that I'm aware of what crazy sounds like. She continued.
"He was coming at me, and right before he could hit me, I saw something. I don't know what it was, but it got rid of him."
"What do you mean, got rid of him? What did it look like?" I couldn't help but want to know more. Why didn't she call me when this happened? Why did she wait until the nightmares?
"Well, it was a black figure, and it looked mad, but not at me, at him. I don't know what happened to Matt, but he's gone."
"Is that when you started having the nightmares?" I did not need her to respond to know the answer. I told her that she could stay with me for a few weeks until she feels comfortable again. I still don't know what exactly the figure was, or why it was under her bed 15 years ago. All I do know, it helped us get away from our father, and got that piece of shit Matt away from my sister. Perhaps all the monsters under the bed aren't all bad. Maybe some of them are there to protect us from the real horrors that are out there. As a young boy, Sam has always had a fear of the dark. It was the uncertainty of what awaited him when he closed his eyes that frightened him. From behind his eyelids, he could almost sense a boogeyman shuffling around in his closet or under his bed, patiently waiting for Sam to fall asleep so it could slither out in the dead of night and do whatever it does to small children. Perhaps it would devour him right then and there, starting from an exposed foot that hung helplessly over the edge of his bed and slowly make its way up Sam's body, as if he were nothing more than an ear of corn. Or maybe it would wrap its pale, gangly fingers around Sam's foot, pulling him out of bed and down into an abysmal wormhole, the entrance to the boogeyman's lair. Whatever the case, Sam has always felt uneasy during that transition between reality and dreams, where his eyes were closed and his body vulnerable to the horrors that came to life at night. A fear of the dark is a common trait among little boys and girls, and Sam was certainly no exception. Checking Sam's room for monsters became part of my nighttime routine. I would inspect his room, shuffle through the clothes in his closet, and checking his bed only to turn up empty-handed. Sometimes Sam would tell me to check the closet a second time, in case I missed a spot. Once he was satisfied, I would climb into his bed and read him a few pages from The Hobbit or Harry Potter. Once he was safe in his dream world, I would creep out of his room and do my own nighttime routine. When I had washed up and my teeth were brushed, I would sometimes lay in bed and think about the boy's imagination. Pretty soon, all of his irrational fears would seem silly to him. Soon there would be other things to keep him up at night. Exams, sports, girls, and yet, I felt a bit jealous at his innocence. How something so irrational was his biggest worry at night. As Sam grew older, my monster checks became less frequent. He didn't want his old man to read to him anymore. "That's baby stuff, Dad," he would tell me. He was growing distant from me. Instead of spending time with me, he would bury his nose in his phone, texting his friends and maybe a girl or two. He outgrew his fear of the dark, and the thought of a boogeyman had been shelved in his mind, much like the books I used to read to him at night. I solely accepted this as part of growing up, but sometimes I would wish for those nights again, where my son looked up to me as some kind of monster hunter, back to a time where I was his biggest hero. One night, I got my wish, although not in the way I had pictured it. I was awoken in the middle of the night by a call from Sam. I picked up my phone, noticing that it was a little after midnight. I accepted his call.
"Dad?"
Sam whispered. My fatherly instincts kicked in, and at once any traces of drowsiness vanished. "Sam, are you all right?" Frantic thoughts immediately flashed through my mind. Did he sneak out with friends, have a couple of drinks, and got behind the wheel of a car, where he lost control and was now calling from the station, or beside the mangled body of one of his friends? It was one thought, and as a parent, you always assume the worst. But Sam spoke in a hushed, terror-stricken tone. He then said something that I never thought I would hear him say again. It was a sentence I heard him say many times as a kid, and hearing it now took me by surprise.
"Dad, there's someone under my bed."
"Don't move. I'll be right there." I swung my legs out of bed and crept out of my room towards Sam's. The rational part of me was saying, "He probably just had a nightmare. You'll probably look under the bed and find nothing more than a pile of dirty laundry and a stained tissue or two." But there was something alarming in his voice. "Dad, there's something under my bed, and it's making weird noises, and I'm scared." That voice trumped the voice of reason. As I neared Sam's bedroom, my heart accelerated. "You're freaking yourself out, man. Mellow out," came the rational voice again, a little stronger this time. I was standing outside Sam's bedroom now. The door was slightly ajar. I took a deep breath and entered his room. Sam was sitting upright in bed, with the covers drawn over his nose, his eyes wide. He looked like a little boy again, and for a second I wondered if I was dreaming. "Sam?"
"Shh,"
was all that came out of his mouth. He then motioned under the bed, his eyes begging me to check. I approached the bed, and I got down on my hands and knees. As soon as they touched the carpet, my nostrils were overwhelmed by a pungent stench. It was a blend of mold and rotting onions. I almost gagged. Something must have crawled under Sam's bed, some rodent probably, where it drew its last breath and was now decaying. Our house was pretty old. It was entirely possible. I scanned under the bed. I strained my eyes, struggling to adjust to the darkness, but all I could make out was a heaping pile of laundry that had been lazily shoved under there. I tried to find any signs of a rodent nestled within the large bundle. It was too dark, and I would have to pull out Sam's clothes to find it. I got on my belly and reached out for the pile of clothes, hoping that the creature wasn't still alive and would pounce on my hand and bite me, tearing off a chunk of my skin and leaving me with rabies. My weary hand got closer to the pile of clothes until I could touch them. Then, without a second thought, I grabbed what looked like a jacket and pulled hard. The clothes didn't move. Then they started to turn over as I let out a shout and banged my head on the wooden frame of the bed. The clothes rolled around to reveal a face attached to them. I nearly pissed myself at the sight. I got a good look at the face. It was the face of an older man, but he looked disease-ridden. His skin was a sickly shade of gray. It sagged around the jawline and was cracking around the forehead, revealing nasty sores. He had a patchy silver beard, which molded around the lumps along his jaw. He was missing a good part of his lower lip, which revealed a single black tooth, standing alone in a crest of browning gums. His eyes were closed, but he was not dead. He was still breathing in a drunken stupor. After I saw it, I grabbed Sam and got the hell out of there. I stood in the kitchen, my hands shaking to dial 911, while my eyes were focused on the darkened hallway, waiting for the diseased man to come staggering out of the shadows. Sam was huddled in a corner, crying. He had regressed to a small child. As we waited anxiously for the police to arrive, I thought of nothing else but the man under Sam's bed. How long had he been there before Sam noticed? A grim image invaded my mind. One where the man had been there since Sam was a young boy, hiding in some false wall in the closet, until Sam would fall asleep, then crawling under his bed, where he would whisper things like,
"Let's go on an adventure. What do you say?"
I shuddered and pushed that thought away, but it kept creeping back. Each time, the man's voice would be more sinister as he reached out and grabbed Sam's exposed foot. The police came and I led them into Sam's room and pointed under the bed. One of the officers got down on his hands and knees and looked where the homeless man was. He turned to me, and my heart sank when he said, "There's nothing there." I looked myself, and sure enough, the underbelly of the bed was empty. There was only a stain where the homeless man was 15 minutes prior. The faint smell of mold and onions lingered. I hurried to the closet and began tearing it apart, banging on the walls, looking for a false one. When there was nothing to be found, I looked at the cops with a defeated expression. They took down the man's appearance, and then left. But not before I heard one of them remark, "Huh, let's go look for this boogeyman," to which the other cop chuckled. Sam sleeps in my room now. He won't go into his room at night. He screams in his sleep. He begs me to check under my bed and in the closet at all hours of the night. I too have difficulty sleeping at night as well. That period between reality and dreams seems to drag on as I keep one ear trained for any strange sounds, like movement under the bed or shuffling in the closet. Who knows if that man will return again? I hope he's moved on to terrorize someone else, for both of our sakes. In some morbid way, I got my wish. Sam is like a young boy again, but I'm no monster hunter. I'm just as terrified as he is. Had I known things would be this bad, I would have been more careful about what I wished for. I hear a scream. I make a mad dash to its source. It's my son. He must be having another nightmare. I get up and quickly go into his room in case there's something really wrong. I give the room a quick glance and give out a loud sigh, making sure he can hear it. "What happened?" I asked him. He pulls his blanket down slightly and tears running down his eyes. In a trembling voice, he answers,
"There's a monster under my bed."
I keep my face straight, trying to suppress my smile. "All right," I say. "What do they look like, Darren?" My little boy, still trying to keep his voice down, replies,
"Not them. It's just one monster. It's all red without any skin. It has two hands and legs, and it was about to eat me."
At the last part, he gets a little teary-eyed. The monster under the bed may not be real, but his fear certainly is. Internally, I let out a groan. I look Darren straight in the eyes and ask for confirmation. "Under the bed?" He gives me a timid nod. I get down on my knees and look under the bed. After a small pause, I look up at Darren, stare him straight in the eyes again, and tell him, "I see no monsters under the bed." This seems to calm him down quite a bit, and his tears seem to disappear. I go to him and say, "Darren, I think you're old enough to know the secret that I've been keeping from you." He looks at me wide-eyed. "The monsters under the bed, they exist, but they can only hurt you until you're 2 years old. After that, they get scared of you. So you've been safe for the past 4 years, and you will be for the rest of your life." He looks me in the eye through all of this. He calms down and I stay with him until he falls asleep. I walk out of the room and let out a sigh of relief. That was sloppy work. The boy was not supposed to find the parents until the morning. Thankfully, the situation has been saved, and soon enough, I can take off his father's skin. It's itchy as hell. His father certainly did not bathe often enough. While leaving the house and heading to the forest to go join the others, I lament the restrictions put on us by the pact 200 years ago. We're not supposed to cause harm to the young ones no matter what. At least the pact said nothing about emotional trauma after the work is done.
there's always a reason to be afraid.